National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Covering elections is a difficult task for any journalist. It's doubly difficult for a Catholic journalist who is committed not only to the best of journalism, but also faithful to our call to be authentic witnesses to Jesus Christ. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Lauren Ashburn, White House correspondent and political director for EWTN's News Nightly, about the challenges of covering American politics in general and this vexing presidential race in particular. And then I'm joined by Register Vatican correspondent Edward Penton to discuss Pope Francis's new picks for the College of Cardinals. Welcome again to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, a senior editor for the National Catholic Register, senior contributor for EWTN, and co-host of Register Radio. I'm filling in as host for Register, editor-in-chief Jeanette DeMello, who is away on maternity leave. Jeanette, of course, sends her best and her thanks for all of your prayers. And thank you so much for joining me. As anyone who's been paying any attention to the current political season can attest, this is an election year unlike anything we have ever seen. For the average voter, the seeming train wreck is hard enough going. You can imagine what this year has been like for professional journalists. I'm going to discuss all of this with Lauren Ashburn, White House correspondent and political director for EWTN News Nightly. Lauren is a seasoned broadcast journalist, reporter, and columnist for such major news outlets as PBS NewsHour, CBS This Morning, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, and USA Today, as well as Fox News. She joined EWTN in 2015. Lauren, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you, Matthew. Nice to be with you.
Well, I'm excited to have you, not just because of this election year, but because you have been such an incredible addition to EWTN. Let's start with your own journey as a journalist and a Catholic. How exactly did God bring you to EWTN?
Well, I was baptized as a Catholic. I went to Catholic school. And when I was young, I'd say fourth, fifth grade, I loved writing, and I always knew that I wanted to write for a living. And it just blossomed from there. In college, I became interested in broadcast journalism. I received a master's degree in broadcast journalism and started working in local news here in Washington, D.C., in very secular newsrooms. And the difference between that and this is quite remarkable.
Talk about working in that secular environment. I mean, people make assumptions about what life is like.
Well, or they make assumptions about what pro-life is like. You know, I never really talked about my position on life when I was at any other news organization except for Fox News. I did finally write a piece about that toward the end of my tenure there. And I wrote a piece also about wearing my cross in the newsroom. For the first time ever, I felt that at Fox News, I could do that. Mm-hmm. I was actually told not to when I worked in local news. And I said, okay, because that's what you do to be a journalist. You know, I look back on it now and I think, what was I thinking?
Right.
But, you know, I'm coming up through the trenches, and I want to be a journalist. I want to be on air. And so I just did what they said.
So here you've spent a long time working in secular news, Fox News included. It's a slightly different environment, as you're saying. But then this opportunity comes along to join EWTN. What were your thoughts when this possibility first emerged in your life?
I thought, this is crazy. Why would I do this? You know, I'd been a manager and managing a newsroom at USA Today. I ran my own company. I sort of was out of the daily news grind. And at the time that EWTN called, I had been running communication for the Pope's visit to Washington, D.C., so coordinating 8,000 media who wanted to come, coordinating the messaging around the visit.
That sounds like its own show here, so we need to come back to this sometime.
Right. So anyway, I helped EWTN there get prime positions and spots, and they called me and said, we have this White House job open. Would you consider it? And I remember hearing the call thinking, I haven't been in the field as a reporter for 15 years, but let me think about it. And one of the reasons that I said maybe was because when I met the Pope, there's this sense of peace and this wonderful energy around him. And I thought, you know, I will do anything I can and whatever comes along to combine my faith with my career. And 2 weeks later, I received the phone call.
How's the adjustment been?
You know, it hasn't been that difficult. It's been liberating, frankly. You know, I actually say on my Twitter profile, the very first thing is pro-life Catholic. I used to hide that, really. And I'm not, I am ashamed of it. But I never felt like I could be authentic and be a mainstream national commentator or news personality. And so that part is easy. Working at the White House, EWTN, believe it or not, is respected. I'm able to ask pointed, tough questions, and my colleagues from the New York Times or Fox or ABC, USA Today, also are interested in the questions that I have to ask and the answers that are given, or in many cases, not given.
Yeah. So as a seasoned political junkie, with that background, with this new change in your life, have you ever seen anything like this campaign?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely not. I've been covering campaigns since the, well, I guess since 1992 is when I started. And, you know, I fell in love with this process, with our democracy, with the way that we go about electing leaders and the very peaceful transfer of power. And this election at times makes me sick to my stomach. If you take just, for example, yesterday, the very disparaging emails about Catholics that came out of the Clinton campaign, it makes me sick to my stomach. Mm-hmm. You know, also all of this, I feel like we're in the gutter. I feel like this campaign has brought us to new lows in a society. And in part, I blame secularism for this. I blame the acceptability of certain behaviors on television and to each other that we never would have accepted in the past.
Right. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for The Register and senior contributor for EWTN, talking with Lauren Ashburn of EWTN News Nightly about being a Catholic journalist and trying to cover this campaign. So looking at it from that standpoint as a really ugly spectacle, morally, spiritually, and a lot of other ways, what are some of your key principles for keeping people informed about this?
I think it's really important to present both sides, as much as you may like or not like both sides, because it doesn't do anyone any good to be living in a vacuum where you're only hearing your opinion over and over and over again in various echo chambers. So when I came here, I said, I am a journalist. I am not just going to present the Catholic side of the news, because I think and I believe with all of my heart that you have to understand every position that people are taking on both sides of the aisle, but you have to present them fairly. And at EWTN News Nightly, what we do is we present the news, both sides, with a Catholic angle. So let me give you a quick example. So at the White House, if I'm doing a story on President Obama and the Iran nukes deal, we will also make sure to include something from the bishops, something from the Pope. What is the Catholic piece of that? How do our lives as Catholics impact these very large international decisions that are being made?
Mm-hmm. And that Catholic lens, then, do you find that it really helps you in your work?
Absolutely. I used to go home and be really tense and wrought up, and because the things that you cover on the local level, of course, murder, violence, get the widow on the set. I mean, that's real, and that kind of coverage that doesn't have deeper meaning,
right,
can be exhausting. And here, you know what your purpose is. You know what your mission is. You're able to be your authentic self in broadcasting the news. And it is so wonderfully refreshing.
So moving forward, obviously this is a fast developing type of an election. We have no idea what's coming almost from day to day now.
Minute to minute.
Minute to minute. You say this just off an interview with Newt Gingrich.
Yes.
For example, what do you advise the viewer and the listener to do? How should they look at this campaign going forward in the brief time that we have left?
Well, you know, Matthew, you are quite a scholar when it comes to Catholic social teaching. And I think that it is very important that we look at the election through that Catholic social teaching and the dignity of life and subsidiarity, and that we remove ourselves from the secular back and forth and in the gutter and dirty politics moves, and that we really focus on what is important from a 30,000-foot level.
Yeah, and there's an upcoming op-ed for the Register and Urban, the issue that's just about to go to print, and that is a reminder to all of us that Christ is King.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you can take as a journalist?
Take. It's something I believe in,
yeah,
as a journalist. It is the overall guiding principle of my life. The Beatitudes rank way higher than the Bill of Rights
for
me.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Lauren, I'm very grateful that you could make the time, and I really do hope that you'll come back.
Would love to. Thank you so much. I admire your work.
Well, thank you. My thanks again to Lauren Ashburn for the gift of her time today. And when we come back, I'm going to talk with Register Vatican correspondent Edward Penton about Pope Francis's latest appointment to the College of Cardinals. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register and senior contributor for EWTN. Well, it's news, of course, that Pope Francis announced that he would be creating 17 new cardinals from literally all over the world. As usual, with appointments to the Sacred College of Cardinals, there was a lot of back and forth about who would be picked, who was left off, and what it all means. To tease that out, I'm joined by Edward Penton, our National Catholic Register Vatican correspondent. Edward began reporting on the Pope and the Vatican with Vatican Radio before moving on to become the Rome correspondent for the Register. He's also reported on the Holy See and the Catholic Church for a number of other publications, including Newsweek, the Catholic Herald, and the Holy Land Review. He's also the author of The Rigging of a Vatican Synod, an investigation into alleged manipulation at the Extraordinary Synod on the Family, published by Ignatius Press. Edward, wonderful to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be with you again, Matthew.
Well, the Holy Father sort of tipped that he would be appointing new cardinals on his way back from Georgia and Azerbaijan. The schedule, though, is interesting, that he's going to be installing them on November 19th at the close of the Year of Mercy. What's your sense of the timing of these new appointments, and sort of help listeners to understand a little bit about what Pope Francis may be up to here?
Well, I think it's kind of usual. It's not usually the consistories are held sort of in the spring, but in the past few years, Benedict as well, they've held them in the autumn. So it was expected. The last one he had was last spring. So it's time now for another one. There are I think 12 or 13 spaces there for voting cardinals, and that's usually the number in a consistory when the Pope chooses cardinals. So it kind of fits that he would have such a meeting and choose cardinals now, and also to coincide with the Year of Mercy. I think it all seemed to fit for him. He said on the plane back from Azerbaijan that he hadn't decided, but a week later then he did choose that date. And I think some people think that he might actually have another meeting, another cardinal creating consistory next spring as well. But I don't know if that's going to happen. There is a limit to 120 voting cardinals. Cardinals can vote in a conclave who are under the age of 80. He's reached that limit after this one. So whether he'll have another one so soon, it's doubtful, but he might.
Yeah, and John Paul II, of course, set that rule aside a couple of times in his pontificate, Francis seems kind of determined to adhere to it.
Yes, it's not a hard and fast rule, although it is something that most popes have tried to abide by. But I think, it's anyone's guess whether the Pope will bypass that this time. But certainly, he's keen to see cardinals appointed who he chooses, and so can take forward the sort of vision that he has for the Church. And once, of course, he gets many cardinals in place who are of his thinking and do share his vision, then it's more likely, of course, that his plans for the Church will be carried forward after he's gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's now appointed, 44 cardinals since his election in 2013. And that's a pretty sizable group.
Yes, it is. It is. Because it's obviously 120, so he needs to get probably over the half if he wants to sort of make some impact on the college. And so far, as you say, there's 44 voting cardinals. He's chosen, I think, 55 altogether, mm-hmm. those also including those over the age of 80. So, but yes, I think, as everyone knows, I mean, cardinals choose the next pope, so they do have significant influence on the future of the Church.
And his choices throughout this pontificate, they seem to follow certain patterns, certainly from the global perspective, but also from sort of the vision, ecclesiastical vision. Talk about both of those, would you?
Sure. I think you can probably divide them broadly into two categories. I think the priority for him when choosing cardinals, one is the geographical one. He wants to choose cardinals largely from the southern hemisphere, where the Church is growing fastest, so in Asia and Africa. He sees that as more reflective of the universality of the Church. So he's done that in all of his consistories. So he's overlooked a lot of the usual traditional cardinalatial sees in the West and in the northern hemisphere, and chosen some obscure places. This consistory, there'll be five countries that have not ever had a cardinal. So that's part of his vision, also going to the peripheries and choosing cardinals who are very much on the peripheries of the world. And then I think the second is that he's just, his vision is very much, I suppose you could say broadly, is a sort of pastoral vision. He wants bishops to become cardinals who have a lot of experience of the pastoral side of things in a parish, for example, or further afield. And have that same vision that he has of what he's trying to do for the Church, which is sort of reform it and bring it into what he sees as is modern day life. I think that's key to him. And just for example, the last cardinals he's chosen, I think a lot of them are very openly supportive of Amoris Laetitia, for example, which was the summary document on the Synods on the Family. They were very supportive of the Pope's particular interpretation of that document. So, so again, very much choosing cardinals who are very much of his thinking.
What's the significance of elevating Archbishop Mario Zanari, the current nuncio to Syria, to the College of Cardinals, but leaving him as ambassador? That's a pretty unusual step, isn't it?
It's very unusual. I don't think that's happened before. Of course, nuncios have been made cardinal before. That's happened a lot. But actually, while they're in post, that is unusual. And I think, I think that is something that, especially being Syria, it's clearly that he wants to signify the great work that he's done there, and also to draw attention to the suffering of the people there, especially suffering Christians. So that's really the thinking behind this. He talked about the sort of the beloved and tormented Syria is the words he used when announcing the appointment, and it's very much in his heart, this whole concern about persecuted Christians. So it's all consistent with that.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the Register and senior contributor for EWTN, and I'm talking with Vatican correspondent for the Register, Edward Penton, about Pope Francis's new cardinals. Now, just as much as there has been discussion about who was picked, Ed, there's also been quite a bit of discussion about who was not picked. And omissions or being passed over does seem to be a consistent pattern here with this pontificate too, doesn't it?
It does, and it kind of goes back, Matthew, to what I was saying earlier about the fact that he's trying to choose new cardinals from the southern hemisphere and from places that aren't traditionally cardinalatial sees. He doesn't like the idea of just because a bishop is head of a big metropolitan diocese, archdiocese, they automatically should become cardinals. The same with the Curia. I mean, there were some officials who people thought would probably get a red hat. They haven't got it because he really wants to sort of share it around and show the universality of the Church. And so we've had in the United States, for example, there's Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles, Archbishop Chaput of Philadelphia. Both of them were considered very suitable, very expected very much to become cardinals. They weren't this time. And instead, the Pope went for Archbishop Tobin and Archbishop Supich, which, and of course, that's but the whole geographical argument falls down there because those two are very close. They're sort of in neighboring states, so that doesn't really match up there. But I think that he chose them simply because they're very much of his mind and vision, and I think that was the overriding factor for him. Again, also that there is the idea that he chooses not cardinals from traditionally cardinalatial sees, that also wasn't quite consistent because he did choose the Archbishop of Madrid, who's always been a cardinal. Mm-hmm. He chose him this time. And the Archbishop of Brussels, he chose to be a cardinal. And he actually passed over the previous one, Archbishop Leonard, and chose a successor who was appointed by Pope Francis. So again, I think you see him choosing cardinals who are very much of his thinking and vision. And I think that probably overrides all the other factors.
And you have the impression that, as with the pick of Archbishop Tobin, somebody he has known for a number of years, that a lot of these picks are very personal. As you say, they're feeling a specific desire on his part.
Yes, that's very true. And I think this Pope, particularly Pope Francis, he is very much about that, the sort of interpersonal relationship aspect. And if he knows them, he obviously trusts them more and probably share his ideas and thinking. So that's a significant factor, yeah. I think the fact that he knows them. I mean, he appointed Archbishop Supich, for example, personally. He didn't go through the usual channels. So I think this is just a continuation of that.
Were there any, from your standpoint, being in Rome, were there any like major shocks in this group? I mean, it was an unusual selection of people, as you have noted from around the world. But was there one or two in this group that really you thought to yourself, well, that is interesting?
Not really that surprising. I mean, I think a lot of people were hoping and expecting that perhaps Archbishop Chaput or Gomez would be appointed. They seemed to be passed over previously as well. So there was expectation of that. That was perhaps a surprise there. But I think in his actual picks, I think they were kind of expected. He chose a very young bishop from the Central African Republic, the Archbishop of Bangui, where he visited, of course, last year. He's only 49 years old. That was quite a surprise. He's now the youngest member, I think, in the college. So, and of course, the nuncio to Syria, that was unusual. That was a surprise as well. Mm-hmm. But I think generally, I think everything was kind of to be expected.
Yeah, in a way, we have come to anticipate that Francis does things that are just a little different, haven't we?
Yes, yes. But I think even that expectation is now not a surprise anymore. So we kind of know where he's heading. Yeah,
exactly. Well, Ed, very briefly, what are you working on?
Well, I'm just working on... I just filed rather a piece on the Pope's visit to Sweden. He's going there at the end of the month for a big Reformation commemoration with the Lutherans. That's going to be an interesting event because no Pope has ever taken part in such a commemoration, and this is going to be for the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. So it's going to be a big event, and I've just gone through how it's being seen in Sweden and how it's being seen elsewhere, and sort of looking ahead, concerns as well as hopeful expectations for it.
Excellent. Well, Ed, thanks so much, as always, for being a guest, and I look forward to talking with you again in the future.
Great. Thanks, Matthew. Thanks for having me on.
That brings to an end this week's episode of Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for NCR and senior contributor for EWTN. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining me on Register Radio here on EWTN. For my producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.